This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Thanks for listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Teresa Wilkie. On today's program, Eco Radio KC will play from our recordings at the April 30 Green for All hashtag Fuel Change Video Watch Party hosted by Metropolitan Energy Center and Poetry for Personal Power. Our hosts are Richard Mabian, who was a featured speaker at the event, and Brent Ragsdale, who was the recorder. But first, the environmental news for the week of July 8. Democracy Now! Reports Chubb became the first major insurance company in the United States to announce it would no longer provide coverage for companies which produce more than 30% of their energy from coal. Chubb's move this week came after mounting pressure from environmental groups. Marianne Hitt of the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign applauded the move and said, "The insurance industry risks being on the hook for trillions of dollars in damages linked to climate change. Insurers are aware of that danger and also aware that the markets and the public are turning away from coal, which could leave them holding the bag for an obsolete industry." Last month was the hottest June on record, marked by record-breaking heat wave across Europe and record-breaking heat gripping Alaska, which has exacerbated nearly 350 different wildfires across the state and accelerated glacier melt. In London, climate activists with Extinction Rebellion marched on five major oil companies' headquarters last Tuesday to call for an end to drilling for oil. This was during London's Climate Action Week. Japan has resumed commercial whaling after more than 30 years of following a ban on the practice. Japan argues that whaling is part of its culture, though critics say that's a mere veil for continued sale of whale meat for profit. Greenpeace Japan stated, "Japan must urgently act to conserve marine ecosystems." Last month, the United States Department of Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue announced the relocation of two key research sub-agencies, prompting turmoil as the agency prepares to move hundreds of jobs from the capital to Kansas City. Numerous scientists, lawyers, ag, and environmental groups have called out the move by Perdue, which they warn will harm employees of the agency and farmers, and they state this is part of the Trump administration's agenda to suppress climate research. Many of those who are being forced to either move or quit are economists and scientists responsible for cutting-edge climate research in this country. The Kansas City Business Journal reports, levees protected the West Bottoms from the Great Flood of 1993 after the area learned its lesson from our history of great floods. Although we can remain confident in the levees this year, a federally funded multi-million-dollar project intends to make them safer. The Kansas City Levee Project earned funds from Congress last year. Construction of the levee system protecting the West Bottoms and the Argentine and Armadale neighborhoods is expected to begin next summer and finish by 2024. The project manager said levees are structurally sound with no significant deficiencies. JoeCoGov.org reports ground-level ozone in the Kansas City region is an air quality problem, exceeding the health standards at times and causing health problems for many citizens. Johnson and Wyandotte counties in Kansas and Jackson, Clay, and Platte counties in Missouri collectively make up the Kansas City Airshed that is subject to air pollution regulations set by the EPA. All five counties and two states work together along with the Mid-America Regional Council, the Kansas City Department of Health and Environment, and the Missouri Department of Natural Resources to monitor and evaluate sources of air pollution and work to decrease it. There's an established ozone season for the Kansas City region, April 1st through October 31st every year. Historically, June through August is when most exceedances occur. Now, our show.
Welcome, everyone, to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 KKFI. In the studio tonight is Richard Mabian, Dave Bennett Freeling is on the board, and I'm Brent Ragsdale. So I think we've got a good show for you tonight. We're going to be doing kind of a recap of an event that took place quite a while ago now, April 30th. It was at a new venue called the Nonprofit Village, which is at 31 West 31st Street. They've got a memorable website, 31w31.org, by the way. The event was a launch party for a music video called The Fuel Change Anthem, which was produced by a group called Green for All and features artists from Oakland, California. The watch party was sponsored by the Metropolitan Energy Center, Green for All, and Poetry for Personal Power. We plan to play some of the recordings that I made at the event, and we'll close tonight's show with the Fuel Change Anthem, so please stick around for that. We are going to do call-ins tonight, so please join our conversation at any time by calling 816-931-5534. Richard, I understand that you're a Green for All fellow.
Yes.
And as such, you were a speaker at the event.
Yes.
Tell us about Green for All. What are they up to?
First of all, good evening, everyone. I'm glad to be here. And Brent, thanks for asking me to come co-host this with you. I am a Green for All fellow. The organization got its start during the build-up to the Obama election. So we're talking 2008, and the first Green for All fellow class went through in November of 2008. And if you remember correctly, that was right after Obama had been elected, November the 8th. And I was in the second class, and it went through December the 4th. It was just you went to Oakland, and you spent 3 days, I believe it was, with a variety of folks that Van Jones, who was the founder of Green for All, brought to the table to help teach you how to present yourself in public. I never forget the lady that worked for Nikes and taught the golfer, Tiger Woods, how to represent and speak, do commercials for Nikes was the one that Van bought in to teach us how to present the green economy. Now, the thing, and I know that I went further than I probably should have, but I wanted to throw that in. Green for All, it initially formed, it was about building an inclusive green economy, strong enough to lift people out of poverty. Which is one of the reasons I got involved in the environmental movement to begin with. I thought that the green movement was the first and only level playing field that I saw come into this country since integration. We give people of color a voice in a climate movement. We ensure that as a clean economy grows, it brings good jobs, better health, and economic opportunities to those living on the front lines of pollution. That was the reason I got into it. That was Green for All's initial mission statement of what they wanted to do. I could have a lot to say about when, where, and what, but that was basically what it was about.
That's a pretty good recap.
Right.
Right up your alley, I can tell. So they have a really good website. I'll plug that now, greenforall, all one word, .org.
Okay.
So as you can probably tell by the title of the video, Fuel Change, the event was around addressing the pollution problems that we have caused by transportation in communities. So we're going to hear a lot of speakers talking about that. The event was actually, the MC was a woman from Poetry for Personal Power, Serenity Speaks, and right at the beginning she recited a poem that she had written especially for this event, and so we're going to play that now. Go ahead, Dave.
So I was challenged to write a poem about this event and about the subject matter, and I am very happy with what I came up with. I'm happy, and I hope that you guys like this poem. And I was telling some people in the audience earlier, if you are a person who listens to keywords, you'll pick up on some of the words in this poem. I'm going to do this poem, and then we're going to go into the video. The poem is called Fuel the Change. Stick. Black like the lives that don't matter, but this is not about race. This is about this place we call home, and here all the colors matter. On this map, you can feel this is more important than just this home. This is life or death. This particulate matter can cause numerous problems to your health, like premature death, asthma, low lung function. It's hard to concentrate when you can't even breathe. This haze is so thick you can't even see. Damage to lakes, damage to streams, but this is not connected to the internet. This is the worldwide interpersonal web connected by billions of human beings. This is important because smoke and smog has no remorse to its victims. It just leaves them gasping for air and clueless to how it even got there. Its innocence is similar to the millions of children affected by respiratory problems every year. This is a trigger warning. For all that can hear, you can help the outcome by understanding pollution and your carbon footprint and the new Green Deal. Everything starts with you. So explore your options and understand the power to make changes at the palm of your hand. Be the fuel. Be the catalyst. The future is full of many colors, but having to cut through the black haze was never part of the plan.
Well, you can tell that that went over really well. It was a well-attended night, even though, as I recall, it was raining cats and dogs,
oh,
and
yes,
we were a little worried about that.
Yes.
But it was really remarkable. There were a lot of young people there, a real diversity of age and ethnicity, and people were really excited about the topic. So we want to talk a little bit about the impacts of burning diesel and gas. Right now, it seems like the environmental movement is really fixated on CO2 causing climate change. But there's a lot more to the problems with burning gas and diesel than just the climate change. There's also just the pure emissions that and pollution that is coming out and impacting our environment, impacting our water in some cases, but almost always it's impacting our air, the air that we breathe. And unfortunately, that impacts poor communities and communities of color more often because the transportation hubs and such, trucking industries, warehouses, those are all situated really close to the communities where a lot of poor folks live. And so it's good that they get some education, and we're here to help with that tonight. So, Richard?
Well, people may want to know why the fuel situation is a problem. And it has to deal with the particulate matter. I did this at one place, and they thought I was mispronouncing particular. But no, it's particulate matter. And 2.5 is what's considered acceptable within the government standards. But they found that in some of the fuel that's coming out, especially diesel, you can find it at 1.0. And that particular degree can be inhaled straight into the bloodstream. So that's what makes it such a dangerous. But when they test for government purposes, they test for the 2.5.
All right. I know that you introduced a speaker, and
yes,
we're going to play her talk. So why don't you give your introduction for her?
Yeah, it was Leticia DeCaney. I was part of a group that's from California called Moving Forward Network, and I'll get into that in a second. They came to Kansas City, and Eric Kirkendall and I, he started a group called Diesel Health Project, which has now changed its name to Clean Air Now. He and I got together and put together a toxic tour. Anytime we go to a city with clean air, with the Moving Forward Network, the people in that city put on a toxic tour and put you on the bus and drive you around and show you the problems that they have in their city. And I did that here, and we ended up in Argentina, and that's where Leticia was asked by some community leader to come out and check out this group that was going to be presenting at the community center. And that's where she came out, and she heard this, and our relationship began from there to what you hear her talk about here when she makes her speech.
Dying, families are being given cancer, that would be a total just class action lawsuits going out, so they keep that out of the table. But we went out on one of our trips, and in the process of doing that, I met Leticia. And I think her story is so profound that I always try to figure out a way for her to be able to talk to me, because we take this from corporations, we take this to real people. I deal with real people. I want you to be able to leave your understanding that this is what's affecting, just like that video, what we have here in Kansas City. Leticia.
Thank you, Richard. So doesn't know Richard, who didn't know Richard before they came here. I'm just curious. All right, there's a couple people. Now you know him. It's like once you get to know him, he'll find a way to lock you in his world and do things better for the community. My name is Leticia Ticheni. I'm a resident, or I was born and raised in Argentina, which is in KCK, next to the second largest rail yard in the U.S. I didn't know that until I met Richard. So the way I met, as he was talking about going on a toxic tour, around this time I was getting more involved in my community. I had lost my son a year before that due to brain cancer, and in that journey, I was just trying to find the best way to help him in the process of healing. It was a 5-year-long battle. But through that, one aspect was through nutrition, and I've learned how that helped him with a quality of life. And unfortunately, when he passed away in 2012, I felt like I had to redefine myself. I was a full-time caregiver, and I needed to figure out what to do. So, started going to neighborhood meetings, and they said, hey, there's an event going on. You should probably go meet and greet people. There are people from all over the world. I had no idea what I was going to. And so, I get there, and about, I don't know, 60, 80 people got off this bus, and they were talking about they were on a toxic tour. And Richard, I think there were only two local people on the bus, but the others were from LA, Houston, New York, New Jersey, Florida, Chicago, and they were talking about their pollutant impacts and solution. And so that's where I learned that diesel is a carcinogen. And after the meeting, that's when Richard came up to me and said, hey, there's going to be more education on air monitoring. You should come check it out. So I did, and during the whole process, I was telling them how I grew up right next to the rail yard. Not right next to the main part, but they would ride right next to my house where I made rock to bed, and just hearing the china, it was just something that I saw every single day, so I never really thought about the pollution that was happening from these locomotives. So when things started to come together, I realized I had to do something to help my community. And that's where Richard says, hey, we're going to get you connected with these people. We're going to gather people up, and we'll do some air monitoring, some education. So I came into this not knowing anything about, I don't have a science background or anything. I just care for my community, and I wanted to make a difference. So I got people together, turned on the monitor, and just having the discussions with people in the community, they started raising up questions like, hey, you know what? I noticed that since I moved here, I have asthma. Another one says, I don't have a sense of smell or taste anymore. And just all these things started coming up. Even the gentleman who said his mom, she worked full time, but when she retired, she worked in her garden a lot in the backyard. And she ended up he said she was having dinner and she just was not functioning right. He didn't know what was wrong, but he says, you know what, I think it was that diesel. And when we did some monitoring in his yard, actually, we monitored in his yard. We noticed that was one of the highest, where we got the highest readings. And it was mainly right there where they have a maintenance shop. They had, you could see anywhere from 60 to 70 locomotives just idling every day, especially in the winter. They say, well, we can't shut them down. It's too cold and it'll take forever to come back up. So, yeah, there was always idling locomotives. USF has a lot of excuses, and really what we wanted to do is become a good neighbor, like say, hey, this is what's going on in our neighborhood, what can you do to help us? But they said, well, the EPA says there's no issues around here. So then there comes that issue. And another thing is one of our commissioners, when our they built a Walmart on the Brownfield site right next to the rail yard, and she bragged at one of the meetings, not related to anything, it was the neighborhood meeting. So she said, you know what, this Walmart, now that it's open and we have a pharmacy, it's making the most money than all the other ones. And I thought, does that tell you something right there? The health of our community, everybody is on the same page. So there's just a lot of things going on in our neighborhood. It's a battle. You know, all these corporations are going to deny it. There's just a lot of issues going on that we still need to educate. Richard and I have gone out and talked to them about how they can reduce exposure. There's a lot more that can be done than what's been going on. So.
Okay. All right. Wow. I think you're right. That's a powerful message that she has,
yeah.
And it's really personal and brings it home. Any of you listeners out there, if you can relate to that or have other stories to tell us, please give us a call. We'd love to hear some comments on this show. Our studio number or on air number is 816-931-5534.
Yeah, I agree. I think she gives it a personal touch. A lot of times we environmental folks, we talk about it from a technical perspective. We talk about it from the carcinogens and the world health and the effect it could have, pollution. We use all these fancy words. But when someone talks about it, how it affected her from a personal standpoint, especially losing the child, the wake-up call that had for her, I love for people to hear her talk because that causes some wake-up calls in other people.
Yeah. So it was a great crowd that night at the fuel change watch party. One of the people that asked a question or spoke was a friend of yours, I think, Richard, who is a bus driver. He recounted that he sees a lot of watery eyes and, you know, asthma type problems that he just thinks are probably pollution related.
Oh yeah, anybody that grew up with public service buses, I mean, back in the day, I mean, that's what your rode was, buses. And trips across town, I remember wanting to throw up on the way back home, especially if you was hungry or something like this, you know, that diesel smell just would upset you. You could get an upset stomach behind it. But we didn't pay any attention to it from the perspective that it was doing damage to us.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a thing in life, you know, you could smell it.
You probably see that too at your school, don't you, Dave?
I do, yeah. A lot of the, when I ask kids, you know, how many of you have asthma, just since I've been teaching over the past 12 years, I've seen definitely a rise in the arms that go up. And like you're talking about, I know in KZK that a lot of the buses are running on natural gas now, which is a real positive impact. But just teaching in KZK and Leticia's neighborhood, basically, and in that area around Argentine, I have my students read an article about Leticia, and then I bring her in most years and have her talk to the kids, and it really has an impact for them to see that someone in their neighborhood is making a change and at least trying to make a change and doing some action. And I mean, she's not overly, sugarcoating anything. I mean, she'll tell you that the BNSF has hardly done anything. I mean, they don't idle the trains, but I think that's a fuel conservation method of saving money for them. Rather than, you know, an environmental concern.
It has those sides to it. The thing I like about Leticia is that she represents the caliber of person that should be, like you say, you train the trainer, teach the trainer.
Yeah.
She is perfect for the caliber of folks that we want to reach.
Yeah.
She doesn't come across like, you know, Miss Sophisticate. you know, and they can identify with her. Those kids listen to her, and she talks in that soft, sweet voice, and, you know, just like she was that night. Anytime she's speaking, there's just a silence in the place. There's not no chatter going on, because people are attuned and just focus right in on the things that she's saying. That's the caliber of person that I think the industry needs to be reaching, especially in the inner city.
Yeah, and it's really connected with a lot of my kids. I mean, kids get really excited about, you know, doing something in their community about it, and so it's been great to have somebody like that.
Okay, well, that's getting towards the bottom of the hour, so I think we should take our pre-recorded break, Dave.
All right, yeah, let's check out Climate Connections, and then we'll have some of the words, and then we'll come back with more from Fuel Change.
Okay. I'm Dr. Anthony Lazarowitz, and this is Climate Connections. During the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the military set up temporary bases that ran on diesel fuel. That fuel had to be transported through combat zones. A study by the Army Environmental Policy Institute found that in 2007, about 170 U.S. soldiers were killed while protecting fuel convoys in those countries.
In Afghanistan, the estimate was that one out of every 24 fuel convoys suffered a casualty. They're a tremendous source of vulnerability.
Retired Major General Rick Devereaux is the former Director of Operational Planning Policy and Strategy for the Air Force at the Pentagon. He says to reduce its dependence on fossil fuels, the military is experimenting with using renewable energy. For example, the Army has tested a portable microgrid system with solar panels and battery storage. He says using renewables could make soldiers safer and save money, because using fossil fuels
generates a big bill every year, so anything the military can do to slowly move towards less expensive and more resilient source of energy will free up dollars that can be used for actual combat capabilities.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
A new documentary explores the tragedy of Ballymurphy and the stories of the 11 Catholics killed by the British Army there during the Troubles.
The IRA did terrible things. The British did terrible things. I think that the focus of my film is very much what the British did, because that's the story that needs to be challenged.
That's next time on Inspired.
That's Tuesday at noon, right after Link's Mix.
After the Harvest, a nonprofit volunteer hunger relief organization, is looking for volunteers to help pick fruits and vegetables to feed people in need. Call 816-921-1903 or go to our website, aftertheharvestkc.org, for more information. This message, a public service of 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Ebony's Bones is a kitchen table conversation that explores the souls of Black folk as we decolonize and question everything that we've been told to believe. Tune in Thursday, July 11th at 7 p.m. and have a seat at the table.
Okay, welcome back to Eco Radio KC. We've been talking about the need to change how we power transportation, particularly trains, trucks, and cars that pollute our environment and make people sick. At the recent Fuel Change video watch party, Richard did a really great job explaining why the commercial transportation is an increasing problem in the Kansas City metro area. Richard, can you educate our listeners on that?
Yeah, I was just telling them during the break, this is probably one of my better stories that I really love to tell, because I think it shows how much we are kept in the dark about what's going on around us, and it's not very much you can do about it, but it makes programs like Eco Radio a necessity, and I'm very honored to be able to be here for that reason. We're going to talk about my boy... Warren Buffett. No negative comments about him. He's a businessman. And he saw how he could get involved in the goods movement in this country. So, goods movement is how we get our product from one place to another, whether it's going on a pickup truck, a van, or a tractor trailer truck, a train, a plane. Anytime we're moving goods from one point to another is this industry of goods movement. So he went out and he found a way he could talk the folks in L.A. and Long Beach into helping them reduce their pollution concerns they had on the coast. And what he told them he would do is to create some relationships with goods that were coming in from China and various parts of Asia. And when they came into the L.A. dock, they instead of offloading them into L.A., they would offload them from the ships onto his trains. Then his trains would bring those products from L.A. and Long Beach to Edgerton, Kansas. And they had an intermodal that was in the Argentine district, Turner district, which is what we went to visit on that toxic tour to show people where he had moved it from. And he built a world-class intermodal out there in Edgerton, Kansas. People don't even realize that that's what's going on. I'll put it to you like this. For Amazon to decide to build two plants within 20 minutes of each other, basically, you know that that wasn't an overnight sensation. That was some long-range planning. And what Amazon had done is just the handwriting on the wall, because in time, that parcel of land out there by Edgerton, Kansas is going to look like, I say, San Bernardino. It's just going to be a series of warehouses, because what happens now with Burlington Northern Santa Fe bringing those products into Edgerton, offloading them in the warehouses, and then trucks are coming up, coming up and down I-35 and north and south on I-70 to Edgerton, picking up those goods and taking them back to their territory. Right now, Kansas City, Kansas is the largest inland port. I'll say Edgerton is the largest inland port in the nation. And now with the good movements that's going to be coming up from the Panama Canal, that thing is getting ready to open up because larger ships are going to be able to come through that direction. And those goods are going to be traveling up I-35 into places like Kansas City because of that interchange where that 35 and 70 cross. So that's what slipped in on us here. They have a guesstimation, and I use that figure lightly, that the truck traffic in the Kansas City metropolitan area is going to increase anywhere from 30 to 40,000 trucks a day. I repeat that, 30 to 40,000 trucks a day. Some days when you out there driving across town, and I don't care what part of town you're in, whether you're Kansas City, Missouri, Grandview, Riverview, North Kansas City, Bonner Springs, Lawrence, I don't care what part of town you're in, someday you're going to look up and you're going to remember what I'm saying here, and you're going to see yourself completely surrounded by truck traffic. That's what's happening to us here in our Kansas City region, which is why this goods movement and this concern for diesel fuel, this concern for regular fuel has become such a factor that companies are looking at Kansas City, Kansas as a place to introduce their electric vehicles. Electric trains. I got a guy that's dealing with electric trains, because if you're going to do this, I mean, it make more sense if you had electric trains than using diesel train. I mean, I understand that there's a need to move the goods. And I want y'all to hear me saying that. I'm not mad at the man. The man's a genius. I wish I had thought of it and had the process of doing it myself. But once we have determined that there is a potential health circumstance that needs to be addressed, then we need to all come together and start figuring out what can we do to lessen the load on people. Okay?
Agreed. Oh, thanks, Richard. That was a good recap of what you said that night at the watch party. So really the second half of that fuel change night was more about solutions, what they were talking about, electrification solutions. So the Metropolitan Energy Center has been about that for many years. And we've got a pre-recorded talk from Beth Pauley from the Metropolitan Energy Center, and she's going to talk about the program called Electrify Heartland. Dave?
So I just want to reiterate what everyone, you know, thus far has said. I mean, thank you all so much for coming out today. I see some familiar faces, some new faces, and it's really important for us that all of you are here. It means a lot to us, so thank you all to our panelists for coming and sharing your stories and your perspectives. It was important to us, you know, as Kelly mentioned, you know, Metropolitan Energy Center has been around for 35 years, and we have been involved in these electrification solutions here at the local but also regional level. In 2010, that was Electrify Heartland's focus, was to really lay the groundwork to install the infrastructure to make electric vehicles viable for urban dwellers. And so Electrify Heartland never really went away, but we thought that we could kind of regroup Electrify Heartland with some more contemporary goals, more of a 2019 focus. What can we do to better utilize this infrastructure? But also, how can we advocate for electrification solutions in a way that isn't like, okay, we all know electric vehicles are a solution, but it doesn't start and stop with that. And so I want to say here today that we're not having this event to tell everyone that you have to buy an electric vehicle to make a difference. We want to kind of start a dialogue about why electrification solutions are important, and want to continue organizing all of these voices so that we can have a very cohesive message when we do talk to our lawmakers and our policymakers, so that we can share these stories and these testimonies and build the urgency around these solutions and these infrastructure needs. And so I do want to give you an idea of some of the projects that we have been working on. You know, while cars are definitely part of that, we've also been helping the Kansas City Airport. We help them deploy a fleet of electric buses. I think they have 4 fleets now actually deployed, and they are going up to, let's see what my notes say here. It's like really small. 10 by 2022, which will be half of their fleet. This is a huge deal. They were actually the first airport in the country. Their marketing department is very humble with that. And we're not. We brag about all the time. They were the first fleet in the country, the first airport in the country to deploy electric buses. And it was, I mean, a huge thing for them, a huge thing for our city, a huge reduction in emissions. I didn't do the math before the event tonight, but it's something that makes a huge impact. We've also been in conversation with KC Rideshare, KC ATA, to look at solutions to deploy electric vehicles at the mass transit level. So what are we doing next? So obviously we have this event here today, which we want to just be the start of the dialogue with all of you, the start of organizing all of you and all of your friends, all of your coworkers, all of your colleagues. Electrify Heartland is, the new goals of Electrify Heartland are similar and also more more broad and more community focused than what it was back in 2010. So we are still working on increasing EV adoption, reaching out to consumers and dealerships. We have 2 staff members. You all want to raise your hands who recently went through the Natalie and David? we have 2 staff members who recently went through the purchase process of purchasing an EV and have kind of a fresh perspective and did kind of encounter some barriers and some stumbling blocks, which really got our wheels spinning. Like, there's still some education, some work that we need to do to the dealerships. There's still a lot of education. If an MEC staff member has to go above and beyond and has to basically study, like they're taking a class to purchase an electric vehicle, imagine what it's like for the everyday person. So there's definitely a lot of work that we have to do in that regard. We also want to continue to make electric vehicles equitable, which means a couple of things: making sure that they are affordable, making sure that everyone knows that they're out there, empowering everybody in communities to advocate for electrification solutions, and also doing an assessment of the heat map that we have to make sure that EV charging stations do exist in all communities. And also to work with the highway corridors to make sure that we can drive. I mean, that's a lot of people's first question is, can I drive an electric vehicle to Denver? If you have a Tesla, you can, but we still have some work to do with the other vehicles. So tonight we have had a variety of, honestly, really awesome perspectives, and that's what we really wanted to bring this whole thing together on, is to really focus on the impact of transportation emissions, really focus on how air quality impacts our everyday life, and start continuing to think about how we can, continue to convey this urgency. I mean, we were just at the Green New Deal Town Hall last week, and as we all know, there is so much excitement, energy around, doing something. And so we definitely want to continue to have these dialogues to make these stories come together so that we can continue to go to our lawmakers and go to our, and even, run for office on the platform of really reducing our emissions and improving air quality. I'm making sure that I haven't. I'm going to hand it over to Serenity Speaks. I think that's all I have to say, but I definitely encourage you all to sign up for our newsletter. If you leave your information, we'll contact you. We'll keep in touch with you about just volunteering. And I do want to say, I think I said it once, and I want to say it again, you don't have to be an electric vehicle driver. This isn't a hobbyist group. We want to advocate. So that's not a requirement by all means. I actually like to have non-EV people in our coalition because you have like the fresh questions about, okay, well, what does it mean? Like, what does this, what does it take to be an EV driver? So please definitely sign up to be on our mailing list, volunteer. And yeah, that's all we have to say.
Okay, that was Beth Pauley from the Metropolitan Energy Center. Again, we're doing a little recap of an event that happened there called Fuel Change.
Yeah.
Richard?
I'm just totally impressed with them because they understand. You know, no one person, no one group, no one organization can do it all. Being here at Eco Radio gives us a chance to talk about the whole process, but there's no way in the world that one person can do it. And so for them to be in a position where they're working with a company that has had success selling electric vehicles to low-income communities in L.A. and Atlanta, and they have developed a relationship with them, and now they're looking at wanting to come to Kansas City. I mean, if your cup of tea is dealing in the environmental world and the low-income community is who's suffering the most from the pollution that's being created by industry, then you have to have some feelings about that low-income community.
Sure.
So we run around trying to talk the Warren Buffetts of the world, for lack of a better another name, to give up these coal-powered plants and fracking and all of these things that are causing hurt, harm, and danger to people's lives, then you would think that those people who've been engaged in those kind of conversations would get involved with something like this to say, if in fact they can do it in L.A. and they can do it in Atlanta, then that means it can be done. We ought to see how much we can do to make that happen here.
Yeah, and they've done a lot of good work. They've been around 35 years. They've got a staff of about a dozen. You know, they've got a great website. I encourage people to go look at that, metroenergy.org. They've got a section on clean transportation where it kind of lays out their new thing they're calling Electrify Heartland, which is kind of like take two of that. They were very instrumental in getting all of these charging stations around town.
Well, that's the wave of the future, y'all. I mean, regardless of what we might want to think about it, that's here. And the reason it's such a factor for me is because of the education that or empowerment or example that it provides for our future generation. If I got a 10-year-old sitting at home, I want them to get exposed to these kind of things. And when they're going to school, start thinking, wow, this is like something I might be able to do. We have to have them examples. And we can't keep looking for the government to be the one that comes up with the program that's going to cause us to be successful. We got to somehow figure that out ourselves. We can't put all the pressure on the schools. Right now, everybody's thinking it's got to be the school. But no, this comes to the community. We need to come together as people. That's why I'll stand with Metro Energy anytime because of their philosophical point of view, what they're trying to do. Dave just talked about the electric buses and at the school. I mean, that's just an example of where it's going. So I'd much rather have them conversation than conversations about protesting out front of people's building with signs.
Yeah, solutions. Just to clarify, it's electric. I don't think we got electric buses, but we got the natural gas buses.
The airport's got the electric bus.
But, you know, if the airport can do it, why can't we move kids with an electric bus?
That's right.
Yeah,
there's definitely prototypes out there, and there's some trials going on in other countries with electric trucks.
There's a lot of change happening technology-wise, right. And it's going to be disruptive, you know?
Well, I mean, but the point about it is it's going to provide that low-income portion of the population with an income saver.
Yes, that's right.
And that's the key right now. We have to figure out a way. I mean, when your average monthly bill is utility is $550, believe me, people, now I live in the inner city, and I just looked at my bill this month, and it was $529, brother. I mean, I'm conscious. I'm climate change conscious.
Yes, you are.
So if that's happening to me, you know what's going on in your average person's home. And so that's a struggling population that verges on mental health issues from trying to figure out how I'm going to keep this daggum utility on. Yeah. So if going to electric vehicles, I mean motorcycles, whatever they got, these motorbikes and stuff, is selling. It's starting to catch on all over, not just in the United States, but all over the world.
Yeah, Dave and I both bought a used electric or hybrid electric vehicle, so you're reaching to the choir
about there. A quarter of the cost in terms of fuel prices. I mean, I pay about a quarter of
that's right.
What I would be paying if I were at the gas pumps.
So right.
To charge it for like a normal commute only costs about $1.
Right.
So I'm thinking that businesses are just going to start providing that for their employees as a
program.
Bring your electric vehicle and charge it for free.
Well, you know, and I tell folks when I'm working with it, everything we're talking about is not about us. It's not really about us. It's about the future generation, and sure. I tell folks that's what you're talking about. Y'all bought these vehicles, but it's not about you. It's about the future generation knowing that people have done what you've done.
Well, hey, Dave, are we about out of time? Because I want to make sure that we have time to play this fuel change anthem. Okay. So if people want to see the video also, you can go to greenforall.org/fuelchange, and you can see this. Thanks for listening in, folks. We'll see you next week.
All righty.
Because of where we live, the pollution coming out of tailpipes gets buried into the kids' lungs. 1 out of 4 kids in my community have asthma.
About my story, about how we used to have my drink, but for some reason I can't speak and I can't even breathe. These toxins is rocking my lungs and I can't even scream. It feel like I'm popping. These toxins is not allowing me to think. It feel like life is messed up in all different types of ways. It got me inhaling the smoke on highways and freeways, and now I'm feeling like I gotta walk around with masked up, cause this stuff in the air been messing with my asthma. Last year I had to dial it back, cause in PE I almost had an asthma attack. See, it's hard to split these rhythms when there's something in your system hiding, lurking in the children, and you hoping it don't kill them. Yeah, I know that this is crazy, it's true, but if a parent lose their child, you don't know what they gon' do. And it's all because of these big companies making this smog a lot, not realizing what they doing, causing my brain to rot.
Pollution in the skies, we gotta change it. Electrify.
Of the world now, and I swear it's making me nervous. Sometimes I feel like we're being ignored. Don't know if they do it on purpose. We scream loud for a little love, but I can't really tell if they heard us. All we asking is for clean air. I guess they don't feel we deserve it. Please, because where we come from, The children they run, run. They get all on their lung lungs. The pollution we taking in every day, we seeing a large effect, right? You got a child and I got a child, we got a child to protect, right? I see the diesel trucks coming in and out of the city, dropping off what they deliver. Air quality even messing up terrain, you see it all in the river. More asthma and cancer, I guess we can say that it's lethal. Just Google particulate matter, it's killing a lot of our people. We just want a chance to live better, love better, we can get better. There's still hope for us all, let's go green for us all. Third Rock Hip Hop, and we trying to feel a change. You'll be doing a lot if you just do what you can.
Pollution in the skies, we gotta change it. Electrify the minds, we wanna change it. We gotta clear the air, we're gonna change it. Gonna change it, gonna change it. Pollution in the skies, we gotta change it. Electrify the minds, we wanna change it. We gotta clear the air, we're gonna change it. Gonna change it, gonna change it.
We are leaders, we strong, can't defeat us. We never back down, cause our planet, yeah, she needs us to stand up. Remember, we are rising together. We can be better than we are right now.
We gotta change it.
There's a better technology out there that's not powered by pollution, it's powered by solutions.
We're gonna change it, gonna change it, gonna change it.
Bring clean cars, trucks, and buses to your neighborhood. Learn more at fuelchangenow.com.
Here's the calendar of events for the week of July 8th. Tuesday, July 9th, 7 to 8:30 p.m., the Topeka Group of Sierra Club meets at the Unitarian Fellowship, 4775 Southwest 21st Street, Topeka. Call 785-249-3976. The program will feature Paul Post and Kay Kelly tell of their January travels to Yellowstone National Park to search for wolves and other winter wildlife. Wednesday, July 10th, 4 to 6 p.m., the Kansas City, Missouri Environmental Management Commission meeting will be at the Kansas City, Missouri Health Department, 2400 Troost Avenue, Suite 4600, Kansas City, Missouri. The meetings are open to the general public. For more information, go to KCMOEMC. On Thursday, July 11th, 6 p.m., there will be a screening of Pittsburgh to Paris with discussion to follow. This is at the Johnson County Library, Lenexa, 8778 Penrose Lane, sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Johnson County, Kansas. This film shows the national debate over the United States' energy future and the explosive decision to exit the Paris Climate Agreement. It captures what's at stake for communities around the country and the inspiring ways Americans are responding. Also on Thursday, July 11th, 7 to 9 p.m., at the KU Natural History Museum, Dyke Hall, 1345 Jayhawk Boulevard, Lawrence, Kansas. You're invited to a celebratory book release of a newly revised and expanded book, Trees, Shrubs, and Woody Vines in Kansas. This is by Michael John Haddock and Craig Freeman. Enjoy light refreshments and explore the museum before the presentation. On July 13, there'll be a rain barrel workshop, 9 to 11 a.m. The Johnson County Stormwater Department and Bridging the Gap are co-sponsoring this workshop at Antioch Park, 6501 Antioch Road, Merriam, Kansas. Open to Johnson County residents, there may be a cost for the barrel, use of all necessary tools, materials needed to create a rain barrel, and installation instructions will be available. Visit Johnson County or Bridging the Gap online for more information. Tune in for next week's Eco Radio KC. We'll have Patricia McElwee, one of the U.S. scientists who presented the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services during May of 2019 in Paris. These items and more can be found on the kkfi.org Eco Radio KC program page, or on our Eco Radio KC Facebook page.
Could deep sea mining lead to deep trouble? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Restoring the world's forests may be a very powerful solution to the climate crisis.
A new study published in the journal Science says that covering 22 billion acres of land with trees, an area about the size of the U.S., could store two-thirds as much carbon as humans put into the atmosphere.
The research may be the first to quantify how many trees the Earth can support, where to plant them, and how much carbon they could store. It follows the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report that said limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius will require planting an extra 2.5 billion acres of forest by 2050.
As Vox reports, trees are usually 50% carbon by weight, and most of that comes from CO2 absorbed from the air. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, a silver maple planted today will have sequestered about 400 pounds of carbon in 25 years.
The study also showed that the parts of the world best suited for reforesting are Russia, followed by the U.S., Canada, Australia, and Brazil.
A co-author of the research said in a statement from ETH Zurich that reforestation is the best climate change solution available today.
However, MIT Technology Review notes that some researchers say the new study brushes over complexities, such as the amount of carbon that would actually be removed, and underestimates the human contribution.
In addition, critics say the report does not consider the political difficulties in planting so many trees at a time when various countries are cutting down forests to make room for farms, animals, and new developments.
Still, others maintain that the most effective response to the climate crisis is cutting greenhouse gas emissions.
A new threat is facing the oceans. Deep sea mining for minerals like nickel, copper, cobalt, and manganese, and these activities could alter the oceans forever.
The Guardian reports that if the plans move forward, large machines will be lowered onto the seabed to excavate the minerals.
However, a report from Greenpeace warns that the nascent industry could remove entire habitats and species, release toxins, and pollute areas that have been undisturbed for millennia.
For instance, the group says that machines cutting into the seafloor and collecting minerals will create sediment plumes, potentially smothering habitats for kilometers around the mining sites.
Additionally, deep sea mining could make the climate crisis worse by releasing carbon that has been naturally stored in sediments.
Mining the bottom of the seas is subject to the control of the United Nations. 168 countries are members of a treaty that established the International Seabed Authority, of which the U.S. is not a part.
The authority has issued almost 30 exploration licenses to governments which sponsor companies that are looking to mine the bottom of the sea. The licenses cover an area five times larger than the U.K.
Greenpeace is urging the U.N. to prioritize conservation and create reserves where extraction is prohibited.
It's being called the Great Atlantic Sargassum Belt.
Scientists have measured a seaweed bloom, perhaps the largest ever, stretching almost 5,500 miles from the Gulf of Mexico to West Africa.
In a statement from the University of South Florida, researchers say that the growth is composed of brown algae called sargassum. The belt is expanding, and while they aren't ready to specify the cause, it's possibly due to increased deforestation and fertilizer use.
Sargassum blooms aren't necessarily bad for oceans and can provide oxygen for marine life and habitat for turtles, crabs, fish, and birds. But around coastal regions, the blooms can restrict movement and breathing of some species, and after seaweed dies, it can choke corals and seagrass.
The seaweed is estimated to weigh 20 million metric tons, or the equivalent of 200 fully loaded aircraft carriers. And as the study's authors say, recurrent blooms may become the new normal. And finally, speaking of oceans, we know that plastic pollution is a massive issue, but there's another problem quietly wreaking havoc on marine life. Ghost nets.
Ghost nets are fishing nets that have been lost, abandoned, or discarded, and they continue to fish, so to speak, long after they've left human hands. Every year, the nets, which can stretch 2 miles long and 50 feet high, drift with currents, trapping millions of marine animals, including sharks, dolphins, and whales, and entangling crustaceans and birds.
Nets can also sink and become lodged in extremely deep water, where it's difficult to retrieve them, as is the case in Puget Sound. So for Washington State, it was time to call in the Army. Army divers, that is.
Yes, the Army has divers who are trained in reconnaissance, demolition, and salvage missions. Historically, they were everywhere from Utah Beach during D-Day landings in 1944 to more recent deployments repairing ports in Haiti after the 2010 earthquake, according to Army Times Magazine.
The divers will work with the state and consultants to remove abandoned fishing gear. The Derelict Net Removal Program began nearly two decades ago, and as of 2016 had removed about 6,000 nets.
Starting July 8th, the Army vessel Seahorse, carrying 20 soldiers from a dive detachment, will be working along rocky terrain off the San Juan Islands for 3 weeks.
The mission is part of the Department of Defense Innovative Readiness Training Program and will not only address the scourge of nets, but also give the divers much-needed deep water training, according to a release from the Washington State Department of Natural Resources.
Joan Drinkwin with Natural Resources Consultants told the San Juan Journal that once the nets are removed, the wonderful thing is that the surrounding environment recovers almost immediately.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Discuss solutions for protecting and managing aging infrastructure at WIC19. Learn more at awwa.org/water infrastructure.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.